Welcome to the catch up where you're perving on Greg Norman again.
Yeah, Marto, you perv.
You're not talking about me. Robin started it and I just had an interested look.
Oh, no, you knew exactly what I was talking about when I said it and the picture was not in front of us.
He does look all right, though.
He looks fantastic. Big day for perving. Quade Cooper, you gave him a high fall as well, Marto. Yeah, look at his.
Actually, it was a pervy show. Robin sent me three topless photos of Quade Cooper and made me look at
them. That's harassment, Robin. You could get.
It is not. I was just showing you the three photos on his Instagram. What do you want me to do?
Did I tell you, Robin, about if you're coming up behind a female, like often I am on the bike, and you're saying, is this worth perving at? You check out their wrinkles on their elbows.
Good tip.
That tells you how old a female is.
Necks. Go for the turkey neck. Male or female. That's why Sophia Loren is never seen in public without a scarf on.
Oh,
that's a proof she's in her 80s. See, the things
amazing.
I know in my little brain.
Tell me.
Oh, come on. Don't you want to put in about the sex talk between the sheets?
I was just about to say that. I also learned some things about how disappointed women are with their sex life and how needs to be improved. So maybe Greg Norman could help there as well. He's good.
I imagine
good
the
multitasking.
Yep.
Plenty in the catch up. Enjoy yourselves.
Can we just run through this perving? We got Greg Norman in the nude on page 1 of the Courier Mail and also page 7. And he's talking about his love of the outdoors and how fit he is. And it's something in the Golf Digest this month where he does the fitness session. And I've seen vision on TV of him working out. It's a big push for Greg Norman. Now, yes. It seems okay. Are we allowed to perv at blokes who are in their 60s, but we're not allowed to perv at girls in their 60s? What's the ruling?
What do you mean you can't? See, now, this is a very, very good question. I don't understand the rules of perving, and I don't want to get either of you in trouble with your wives, but no. I just generally talk on behalf of men, so that will save you.
If I'm on my push bike, let's say, after work some days, I'll go down along the river, and I'll ride my pushy, and you'll come up behind a girl, and you go, gee, there's an attractive-looking figure. And then you go past them and you realise they're a lot older than me and I feel a bit bad for looking.
Okay, why do you feel bad?
Because it's wrong.
Why?
Well, you're not supposed to.
Why? Answering the question. I don't understand that. You can only perv on young people if...
What's a cutoff?
I haven't put a lot of thought in this. I'm just telling you the way my life pans out as I go through the day.
But also, Robin, you got to remember... Was it Macron's wife, the French president's wife, 63 years old, looks great. Wasn't there a week of so-called controversy because Donald Trump said she was in great shape? Wasn't that one of the greatest outrages that it's ever taken place?
And that was because of Trump rather than...
But why?
If she was 24 and he said the same thing, he'd be in trouble, wouldn't he?
Isn't that the fact, though? That's the whole point of her. Like, what have we heard about the wife, the 63-year-old
wife? She was the teacher of the president of France when he was at school, and he married her.
Yeah.
She's a lot older than him, and she looks all right.
Yeah. Why is that bad, Robin? Why is that a bad thing to say?
Okay, so from my money, the reason why it was bad was because it was Trump, and he says bad things. Like, if he'd said it about, as Marto said, a 24-year-old, I would agree, because he's just one of those kind of guys. He's kind of, he's lecherous, and he just makes you feel uncomfortable as a woman. Like, if I was in the room with
Robin,
him, I would feel a bit, ugh. But... If it comes to, I think they're right. The French president's wife looks amazing. I perv on her because I think she looks absolutely fantastic, which is why I don't understand the age thing.
Is it bad
for you that you're looking at someone that old?
No, I don't think so. I think I look at her and I go, yeah, she looks good. Here, look, I'll give you some ages just to say if this is all right or not, right? So George Clooney's 57. That's okay, isn't it? What do we reckon? We're all okay with that?
Yeah.
Yeah, 55, 57. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, Brad Pitt's in his 50s now. We're all good with that, are we?
Yep. What, to perv at him, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh,
Robin?
Yes.
What about...
Absolutely.
There you go. Well, Helen Mirren, people like her. She's in her... She's in her 70s. Sorry, you're right. What about
that?
Is that all right?
She's a good example. Do you find it's okay to perv on Helen Mirren? I think she... I can.
It's more appreciate than perv. It's not, I'm not perving. It's more appreciating.
Oh, that's a good point. I like that. The turn of phrase.
Write it down.
Yeah.
And what about this? Madonna. She's 170. Is it okay?
You can't help it. She's thrusting it in your face.
Now, what a day it is today. It is the, 48th anniversary, Marto, 1969.
Of the moon landing.
Of the moon
is
landing.
It?
Yes, Robin. You have a little bit of audio of that, Brendo?
Oh, this.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
There That is Neil Armstrong as he steps down onto the surface of the moon.
Wow.
Now, Marta, you're old enough to remember seeing it live.
I was in grade one at Chermside State School. I reckon it was lunchtime. Someone might be as old or if not older than me can remember. I reckon it was about 1 o'clock during the day here in Brisbane. They called us in from lunch. Like we were having a game of soccer. I can remember it. In grade one, kicking the soccer ball around. Our whole school, and there would have been 300 to 400 kids at Chermside State School on Gympie Road there, had to go to the library. There was one TV, as far as I can remember, at the school. We didn't have a TV at home. You didn't have TVs. We didn't get a TV till 1972, I reckon. Mm-hmm. So all they went there, can you imagine 350, 400 kids in this little library trying to watch some stupid idiot walking on the moon? That was my memory of couldn't give a stuff because I was a little kid, couldn't get in the way. All the grade sevens were in the way of their one television, black and white.
Yeah.
That's my memory. First time I ever watched TV, I think, was the moon landing.
Wow.
First time you watched
and I only
TV.
Just saw it and I went, oh, let's get back to soccer. That was my moon landing. Isn't that funny?
I wasn't alive.
So many of our listeners would have been alive, but that was me. Grade one, first time I ever saw anything on telly was the moon landing.
So that's the first big event you saw on TV, and that's what we want to talk about. Because for anyone of your generation, Marta, it always goes down as the biggest event that they ever saw.
Just check if anyone else watched it. If that would have been their first thing. The TVs weren't very common, so it may have been your first big thing was watching the thing. I'd love to know what time. I think it was 1 o'clock in the arvo.
Robin, what was your biggest thing? What's the first thing you remember seeing on TV? Big thing.
My parents were very full on about, you know, the debate about having a television or not having a television went for a really long time. And then they decided to get one in 1976 because of the Montreal Olympics. And I think there was a special deal going on at the Olympics. They were trying to push television.
Was that colour by then, Robin? Do you remember?
Yes, it was, because I remember she was wearing a white leotard. Mind you, that doesn't necessarily make it colour. But it wasn't just Nadia Comăneci.
I watched the Romanian wonder gymnast.
Yep, get a perfect 10. And I woke up at like 4 o'clock in the morning because not only was it so cool that I was allowed to watch television, oh my Lord, but I watched this little gymnast who just did the most amazing things. So
we got our TV for the 72 Olympics. I can remember that's what every Olympics for, 72, 76, 1980, they used to go, time to get your telly.
People would
get TVs for big events.
Let's go to the phones. 1-3-3-5-3. What is the first big event you remember seeing on television? Brendo, you're the youngest in the room. What was yours?
I was alive for the 2000 Olympics, but probably
you really remember.
Yeah, the Twin Towers. Mum woke me up and I remember.
Righto.
Yeah, sitting there
goodness,
and just being amazed.
How old were you, Brendo?
I was 11. It's unbelievable.
It is still. Yeah, so that's the question. 1-3-3-5-3. What's the first big event you remember seeing on TV?
Imagine kids in the car going to school going, what are they talking about?
In 10 years' time, when whoever's doing this show will be, what was the first app you downloaded? Let us know. Talking about the moon landing, it's the anniversary of the moon landing today, and it was probably the first properly major global television event. Marta, it was the first thing you ever saw on TV.
I was in grade one at Chermside State School and the whole school had to go to the library and watch it on the one TV set.
Do you know how inconceivable that would be for my children? You even just saying that? The idea that they
400 people
have
rounded up and watching one little black and white screen.
Black and white. That's not that they can have in their palm, that they can rewind, that they can focus on, that they can go back and share with their friends. Like, it's completely inconceivable to this
imagine
generation.
The likes it would have got.
Oh my God.
Neil Armstrong, Instagram.
Mark's from Browns Plains. Mark, what's your first major TV memory?
Yeah, it was the moon landing. I was in grade one at Harrisville State School.
Right, you were out at Harrisville. What time of the day was it?
It was early afternoon because Mum kept me home from school.
Oh, you stayed home to watch it.
Oh, you were fancy. You had a TV at home.
No, mate. We had to go across the road to the Retrovision store and the bloke turned the TV around the store so we could all stay in the footpath and watch it.
What a guy. Are you serious?
That's how we used to watch telly. The family would go out after dinner and go to the electrical store in your suburb and that's how you'd watch telly. I remember those days.
Oh, boys.
You're a gem, Mark.
That's great, Mark. Thank you.
That's what rich people had. They had televisions in their house, not just at the store.
Andrew of Brookfield, what's the first thing you remember, the first big event you watched on TV?
Yeah, hey guys, America's Cup.
1983.
1983.
That was about quarter to four in the morning, correct?
Yeah, that's right. My dad came into the room screaming at us to get out of bed, dragged us into the living room.
That's when Bob Hawke wore that ridiculous jacket and said that if anyone sacks someone for not going to work today, they're a mug.
They're a bum.
Exactly.
Andrew, was your family a big sailing family until that moment?
Not really, actually. I was in the Sea Scouts, so that's about it.
Oh, whoa. That's what I found strange, Andrew, looking back on that. Mato, no one cared about sailing before or after, did they?
No, a couple of kiddies from Ascot and that was it.
Although I will say this, that they reckon that from that big win in Australia, the Australian sailing fraternity got itself together and we ended up winning gold medals in
sailing in the 2000s
and on. Enough. And they reckon that they attribute that to the win of the America's Cup of 83.
Yeah, righto.
They've certainly helped Alan Bond. Macca is from the Gold Coast. Macca, what was the first big thing you remember seeing on TV?
Mate, we were living in California at the time in San Jose, and I was going to primary school. I was probably about nine. Yeah. And, we watched Armstrong walk on the moon. Funny you say that you guys watched it at lunchtime, because so did we. That's a bit strange.
Oh, no, don't do it, Macca.
Hold on. Was it...
That's right. Figure that one out, because you said you saw it at midday or during the daytime at school. Yeah. Well, so did we. So how did they do that? Because California time is different.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah, that's true.
Are you saying what I think you're saying, Macca, that it's not... They did it in a movie lot.
I think it was just a rerun.
Oh, it's a rerun of something they prepared earlier, Macca. And Macca, where's...
Here's an interesting one. I was living in Scotland. I can still remember. I was 7 years old. We were just about to move to the States, to California. Yeah. And we actually watched JFK getting assassinated on the TV.
Jeez. That's
and my parents being Catholic, they were both just absolutely distraught that JFK had been assassinated.
But JFK, but surely, Macca, you believe that he wasn't assassinated, don't you, Macca?
Well, I don't know. Maybe that was a rerun too.
Yeah, Macca. There
we love him, man.
I'm pretty sure I saw Elvis down the coast last weekend.
Yeah, of course you did.
We love him, man. The question's the moon landing on the day it happened, mate. You're going to Bar Pacino for functions, after work drinks, casual dining. Head to Bar Pacino, 175 Eagle Street. $200 for you, Macca.
Oh, you guys are legends. Thank you so much.
You too.
Cool, nice to talk to you. And
good on your show. It's great. Rock on.
Good on you, Macca. Wow.
Would he have said that if we didn't give him a $200?
Probably not.
Warning, the following segment contains serious, sexy talk and music from Kenny G.
Between the Sheets with Robin Bailey.
All right, Robin.
This is so much of a community service for all people who need to learn stuff about women. I've got this survey, and I spoke about it a couple of weeks ago, from the Australian Women's Weekly. They asked 1,300 women to complete the survey, and they could be anonymous. Oh, yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah, and I've got a pie chart. That's how comprehensive it was.
Just remind everyone now, a pie chart is different to a bar graph. The bar graph goes up and down. The pie chart's the round one and just gets slices.
Everyone knows that.
Yeah,
just for any of the people who aren't stats minded.
Okay,
now,
fair enough.
I'm going to give you the headline and I'm going to give you the options. And while I talk this through, I want you to think about it for yourselves. Right. So these women were asked, how would you rate your sex life? The choices were excellent, good, average, poor, non-existent.
I think the last category was Edelston.
Which of those categories do you think had the most percentages?
Average.
Average, yeah.
Sadly, it was non-existent.
Oh, no.
How much of the pie did it have?
30%.
Oof. Non-existent.
One in three women are taken part in this survey do not have any.
See, in our minds,
it's so
Robin,
minimal.
That's amazing. In our minds, girls can get sex whenever they want it because there's just a big queue of blokes, toey ass. Yeah. Just not enough girls who share the same keenness.
Yeah, well, exactly right. And I'm guessing that the readers of the Women's Weekly are probably mums who have small children who either are too tired or can't be bothered, is what I'm saying. Okay. So, Ed Cavalli, take this as a warning.
This is going. Okay, yep.
What is the number two? What do you think has the second most response? Remember, it's excellent, good, average or poor?
Poor.
Mato?
Average.
No, it's good. So either they're not having any or it's really good, 26%. So again, almost one in three are saying it's good.
That's a big gap there. Okay.
Okay, number three on this is the choice between average, poor and excellent. Which one are you going with?
Well, we've got to go to excellent.
How many times a week's excellent?
Well, that's up for conjecture. It's how good it is. It's not how many times. It's how good. It's how good it is. How satisfied are these women?
Excellent. Average. Excellent.
Average. 21%. So number one is non-existent. Number two is good. Number three is average. So that makes number four is excellent. 13% of Australian women are saying that you blokes are satisfying them and, you know, their partners, I should say.
There's a lot of pressure, Robin. You know, there's a lot of pressure. This survey
the Women's
is creating
Weekly,
it's creating a lot of pressure. Mm. You know, I don't expect much in life, but, you know, if my wife got a survey, you'd hope she'd tick an excellent just for consistency,
what,
just for longevity. Sympathy? You know, sympathy. I'll take sympathy.
Robin, Marto and I are very worried that the first test against England, the Ashes test, which is due to take place at the Gabba, might be under some threat because of this cricketer's pay dispute. So we want to get more information. And we're going to a man, played 50-something tests for Australia. Wonderful opening batsman. I think he started down the order, worked his way up. But for me, Marto, he didn't bowl enough left arm spin because
when he did,
it was always interesting. He
so
is now
deceptive.
He's now the player relations manager for the Australian Cricketers Association. Good morning, Simon Kadich.
Good morning, guys and girls.
All right, let's get to the big stuff straight away. Why didn't you bowl more, Catfish?
Because it would have provided the opposition with too many easy runs. I wish I'd been able to face myself more often in test cricket. I would have made a lot more runs, that's for sure.
All right, let's get to the pay dispute. Everyone's talking about it. How unlikely are we to see some test cricket this summer, Simon?
Look, obviously the Ashes is still a long way away. There's a fair few tours prior to that. I think Bangladesh in mid-August and then the one-day tour to India in late September, early October. So there's a bit before that. But given the ongoing nature of these negotiations and the impasse that, you know, obviously got to June 30 to put us in this position, you know, that is a possibility, but you'd like to think that both parties will come to an agreement prior to the Ashes. So hopefully, you know, both parties are still a fair way apart at the moment. But the good thing is there's been a lot more negotiations in the last week or two since June 30's passed.
Hey, Catfish, tell us about Tim Cruickshank. Now, he was the ACA commercial manager. I believe he's running something called Cricketers Brand, but he's in India right now trying to sell the personal rights to the players. And we've already got some players aren't going with Toyota anymore. Mitchell Stark's gone with Audi, I think. Steve Smith going with Mercedes. What's going on personally? Is this a thing where we're breaking away from Cricket Australia's sponsors?
Yeah, look, basically what happened was the players signed over their IP rights, basically anything to do with their image, name and likeness that has a commercial value. So they signed that over to the ACA prior to June 30. So Tim's met with a lot of the existing commercial partners in the last few weeks and had a sense of frustration that they feel like they've been left exposed by this whole scenario. So as a result of that, he's gone over to India to sort of try and advance that position and get some more certainty around it. And I think basically India obviously presents an opportunity to I guess, broaden the international market for the players because it is the biggest cricketing market, you know, with a lot of global brands that want to have access to our players. And I think in the past that's been restricted because it's basically been Australia-only brands giving Cricket Australia have controlled that sort of space.
Who do you think's winning the pub test are people preferring Cricket Australia or the cricketers?
Look, to be honest, I think it's always going to be one of those tough ones where everyone's got, you know, their opinion on it and the fact that, you know, there's going to be perception that because it's in regard to pay, there's always going to be that sort of side of people think it's the players are being greedy, which I don't agree with. I think the players are standing up for the principle here of the whole revenue sharing model that's been in place for the last 20 years. And I think the big thing from the players' point of view has been that they wanted to make sure that all players, both, you know, the state men and the state women, were part of this revenue share model and not just a select few. And that's where I think that in itself sent a really strong message that the players weren't going to be divided on this. I think at the end of the day, you know, there's more to it than I get. Obviously, the money is a big part of it, but at the same time, the players are really mindful of their workplace, particularly at state level, being affected by Cricket Australia having complete control of the game. And as a result, that's why, you know, the ACA is there to do their role, negotiating on their behalf. And look, I'd like to think that every party, there's that much money in the game in Australia at the moment with you know, the revenue, that it gets split up accordingly so that grassroots cricket can thrive, the players are well looked after, and there's enough money there for Cricket Australia to run the game. And you'd like to think with that amount of money, that can be sorted. But as a result of what's, I guess, the industrial relations style negotiation that took place prior to June 30, that's obviously made it very adversarial. And as a result, both parties have been in conflict. Hopefully, with the, you know, the result of that tour being cancelled to South Africa, the A tour, hopefully, and that's probably the biggest thing that Cricket Australia realised. Now, all of a sudden, the players mean business here. They're not going to be split because they tried to split them with individual contract offers. So, you know, the players have stood up to that, and credit to them. But now both parties have got to, you know, got to find some mutual ground and make sure that the whole game prospers.
Simon Kadich, former Test cricketer, now the Player Relations Manager at the Australian Cricketers Association. Telling everyone just wants cricket. We all just want cricket to be on. We want everyone to be happy.
So I don't want it to be on until after the grand final. I don't want to see cricket until after the footy grand finals, then on you go.
Let's hope that we can get a deal done and come, it's January, that Damien Fleming and Mark Waugh are sitting there in their pink shirts commentating the Big Bash, which, as we know, is the most important thing. Thank you, Simon Kadich.
Thanks, guys.
Oh, yes. Now, we've been talking over the last 24 hours about dog attacks, and as you just heard, or you guys agreed, that it's 100% of the owner's responsibility to make sure that dogs behave well. So we figured we would get our own dog and animal behavioural specialist, Laura V, on with us, who has Dognitive Therapy. Laura, good morning. I love the fact that this morning you're going to train the adults and the parents of the puppies.
Oh, hey guys, it's pretty exciting that word's finally catching on, that people are realising it's got so much more to do with us than the dog. So yay people, we're finally catching on. Thank goodness.
Laura, does every dog need to be trained? I'll give you mine. A 6 month old Kelpie, it's a wonderful ball and frisbee retriever. You know what, when I want to put a lead on it, it takes forever to catch the bugger. He is so quick. I haven't done formal training. I virtually use the ball to control his actions. What should I be doing?
Yeah, that is training. Because what you're doing is you're using the ball, which he loves, as a reward system. So you're using that to encourage him to do what you want. So you are training. I mean, you have to train. Training and learning is an ongoing process. Everyone is learning every day. And you can't just sort of put a puppy in a room 24 hours a day and say, hey, grow up and do the best you can in the next few years. Like, they need to learn. There's always some, you know, enrichment that they need to pick up and to become the best they can be. And it's not surprising.
What are the basics, though? Is it sit, stay, come? What are the basics I'm supposed to have done?
Well, I think when we're talking about sort of, you know, preventing kids especially from being bitten and being put into danger, and also those dogs being put into danger, there's lots of things that people need to think about. And, you know, I don't care if your dog is Snoopy or Lassie, or if you just have a stuffed toy in the shape of a dog, you never leave a dog and a child unsupervised. It's a no-brainer. And it's not because I'm worried about the dog, it's more about that kid, because 3-year-old, 4-year-old kids don't understand limitations of dogs. They don't have the brain ability to understand, you know, that there's a life outside their own needs. So never, ever, ever leave your dog unsupervised with a child. And I think also, you know, even with you and your dog and kids, it's about providing leadership and teaching your kids or even yourself more about respect. You know, humans have descended from monkeys, dogs are from wolves. And
whoa. I'll stop you there.
This is
sorry.
Not a religious topic.
I was designed by Jesus a couple of hundred years ago, so you can stop that.
I know. Really? You want me to stop that? Is that offensive?
No, it's not.
Let's say if there was a possibility that we had descended from. Like, it's very unlikely, but if it was a possibility,
we love
cuddling. We love grabbing on the cheeks and expressing our love that way. Dogs don't like that generally. Dogs generally don't love to be hugged by kids, especially, or have their ears pulled on, or their cheeks squeezed, or be screamed. Exactly. And so there's only so much a dog can take before they say, hey, please stop it. I mean it this time. And unfortunately, a child gets bitten. So really, parents, we've got to step up and say, hey, my dog is a sentient, intelligent animal as well. They have limitations. They have feelings. I've got to set my dog and my child up for success. So there's so many things we need to be doing. Even, you know, creating a safe place for a dog where they can get away from kids and where kids can't access. You know, things like that are really important as well. And make the experience a dog has with a child positive. And so, you know, Marta, you might be using the ball with your dog. And yeah. Every time there's a kid around or a baby around, you play with the ball. But food is great. So every time your dog sees a kid or they hear a kid squeal or they, you know, are touched by a kid, they get rewarded with roast chicken.
Oh, okay. So
that's become a really positive experience as well. And the last thing, it's a no-brainer, but never approach a dog you don't know. So, like, I'm a dog behaviourist and I never, ever, ever approach a dog that I don't know. And I'm kind of like a crazy lady on the street. If there's a dog, like, tied up to, like, a supermarket, you know, pole out the front.
So don't pat that.
Don't pat them. And I often see parents on their phones, probably on Facebook, with their kid running in slow motion towards that dog. And I'll step in sometimes and say, whoa, mate, just be careful. Don't approach that dog because you don't know how that dog's feeling. And often, you know, these sorts of situations where that dog's feeling anxious or stressed and they can't get away from that child because they're tethered to the pole, you know, the only way that they can express how they're feeling when their limits are pushed is to snap. So we've got to get smarter. We've got to set our dogs up for success and teach our kids about respect as well.
And Laura, is there any way, if you have an aggressive dog and you know they're aggressive, that they can stop being aggressive? Or is that just their nature?
Most of the time, when we use the word aggressive, we're misusing it. So a dog that's aggressive is a dog that's generally in prey drive, willing to catch, kill, harm, eat their prey. So most dogs are not aggressive. They are what we call reactive. So when we're talking about dogs biting children specifically, most of the time, in fact, I would probably say anecdotally all of the time, that dog has been cornered into a situation that they have tried in many ways to express how they're feeling. No one's listened until they've eventually bitten and then everyone's going, oh my God, I had no idea that my dog could do that. And then who gets blamed? The dog does. So, you know, we've really got to start to think about what are our dog's limitations? Get to know our dog's body language. If your dog is moving away from a child, listen to what they're trying to say. If their tail's between their legs, you know, if there's white in their eye or their ears are back, or if you do see them growl, I mean, these are their little indications in which they're trying to say, hey, can someone have my back here? Because this child is cornering me and what am I supposed to do?
Can I just return? I don't know if you have an answer, but the evolution of the dog. You're saying it came from the wolves and the few remaining wolves in the world these days. What would they make looking at these little fluffy white dogs knowing that somehow they're related? What would they make of? Are they a pack animal, those little fluffy white dogs?
We all know what the wolf would make of a fluffy white dog.
Yes. Entree?
Probably. Yeah. Oh, look, you know, the thing is what they've descended from wolves, but they're not wolves. So we've domesticated dogs over 30,000 years. So we have kind of created our own dog evolution with 300 different breeds, all selfishly for our own needs. So they're definitely not wolves, and you can't domesticate a wolf like you can a dog. So they're completely different nowadays.
All right, Laura V, Australia's leading dog behaviourist, telling us all how to get better socialisation with our dogs. LauraV.com.au. Thank you. Dognitive Therapy is the name of the book, which is out now as well. Always a pleasure. Thanks, Laura.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, Mick Fanning is over there at the moment, the World Surf Tour. It's at Jeffreys Bay, which is southeast South Africa. The best waves in Africa. I think you remember or remember 2 years.
Sharks.
Yep. Well, 2 years ago, it was when the shark nailed him and he punched it back and all the rest of it. Well, overnight, if you haven't heard, there was another one while he was in the lineup in the set of waves waiting for a wave in this quarterfinal. Another enormous great white was spotted. And we've got audio. I think this is the Today Show speaking to him. But they started with, are you okay, Mick?
It was a long way away. We're all good. The Jovi Soil staff, they had all under control and we're all good.
and his poor old family. They asked you, have you contacted them?
No, rang Mum. Fine.
Mum's good?
We're all good.
Yeah, and then he was showing some vision of what the shark looked like.
Wow, I haven't even seen this footage yet. Look at that thing. Deja vu. No, at least they saw this one. That thing's a beast. Poor wowzers. Yeah, I'm glad they got us out of the water.
All right. Why isn't he scared? I'd be terrified.
He's laughing about it.
I know. I don't get that.
What is it about surfers, Marto? Because, you know, he punched a shark. He punched a shark.
I worry about him. When I go in the water, and I only boogie board these days, and out the back, though, so I love it. But I worry because I'd be the first one they'd take, so I'm always thinking about it. But my son and all his mates who are surfers, they all go, the shark is in your brain. That's where it is. If they don't worry, they don't care about it. They don't. People like Mick Fanning, all the surfers, you ask any surfer, they don't even consider that sharks will ever hit them. They just go, God, the waves are good, and they're mindful, and sometimes they see them. Yeah, because when you're on a board, when you're out there and a shark goes under you, it happens so quickly you haven't even got time to do anything. They don't have the fear in their brain of sharks. They just, it doesn't enter their mind, so therefore it doesn't make them fearful.
What's the phrase you just used?
Shark's not in their brain.
The shark is in their brain. So the shark is in your brain.
The shark's in your brain, but the shark's not in their brain.
Well, the shark's often on your leg.
Yeah, exactly. Right, I'll be dead. It's in the top five things that Australians fear about.
Well, then we're obviously not asking surfers. My father-in-law, 60, he's been surfing his whole life.
The shark's not in his brain.
Never thought about it. He says he's never thought about it once. Quite amazing.
And if you do start to think about it, you wouldn't go out. You'd be so twitchy, you'd go, oh, no, that scared me. I'm going back in. Like a cloud would scare you.
Yeah. See, I thought that's what would happen to Mick Fanning from the 2 years ago. I thought that, yep, he was a surfer. He would have been the guy that didn't have shark in his brain. But then after he had to punch it, that would get in his head. But clearly the waves were better.
The feeling of euphoria they get when they're on one of those waves. Did you see the waves at J Bay yesterday? If anyone hasn't, check it out. They were like 8 foot, 8 to 10 foot. That feeling overcomes any fear of sharks. It's only a shark.
It's only a shark.
Really?
Look at that. Wow.
It's a great white and it can eat you.
Hey, Robin, I might need you here to help me navigate my way through something that's on TV lately.
Okay.
I just saw it again on telly. I watched it with my son the other night. Well, it was only vaguely. I was cooking dinner and I look around and it looked to me like there was somebody sitting on a toilet dropping a few kids off at the pool, I guess you'd say.
You're allowed to say that. I thought that was gone, that one.
Which one?
Oh, no, the kids at the pool, that's fine. Yeah, okay. So
I don't know. What else? How else do you say it?
I'm cool with it.
Doing number twos.
But in an ad. It was an ad. And I looked up and I said, what was that?
Harry, must have been an ad for Yummy Mummies.
No.
It's about the level.
I've just seen it again. Right. My wife was watching Yummy Mummies last night and trying to convince me that it's the best show on television.
Oh, I love it too, Kath. You and me, dirty little secret.
Let's get to Yummy Mummies at some stage of our career.
Sure.
But I've seen it again. I've now seen it three times. I've now got the audio. So, Robin, it appears to be a girl is at work.
Yeah.
She goes to the toilet.
All right.
She sprays something into the toilet. She does her number two business. And then she comes out of the toilet. The boss goes in and he can't smell anything.
Okay. He so goes does in. It?
Hang yeah. On, he goes in.
Yeah. They don't seem to have.
Unisex.
Unisex situation.
Oh, just like Ally McBeal when they had the unisex toilet. Okay.
Well, all right. Well, let's just tell me what this all means. Here's the first part of the ad.
Even Hollywood's latest sweetheart needs to punish the porcelain occasionally. But to avoid embarrassment, I give every bathroom the VI poo treatment.
VI poo. All right, so she's pretending she's a famous actress. Like, they even need to go to the toilet. I didn't realise that. I thought they had everything sewn up. And just nothing went in, nothing came out. Yeah, all right, so that's the first bit. Second bit of the ad.
Spray generously before taking your seat, and VI poo forms a protective layer, trapping the icky smell of your devil's donuts. So, no red faces in front of your boss, Hollywood's hottest director. Even a VIP needs to VI poo.
Devil's donuts.
Real, like this is an actual product you can buy.
I
not
just
a parody.
It was on Channel 9 in the fairway away, 10 metres away, about 3 minutes ago. Devil's Donuts still being spread across our screen.
Okay, this is it. They've missed the point, right?
What
the
is the
smell
point?
Is one issue, but when it comes to women and going to the toilet, You just don't want anyone to hear you doing anything.
Yeah. Okay, it really so needs to come with a stereo, like an iPod as well, that you can set up and have some music playing.
Yeah.
Have the
when
spray
I go to
going.
The loo I make sure no one is in the toilet at the same time.
What happens like, if they are?
Well, then I'll go another time.
But don't you sit in there like, oh, I always go, who's that?
Yeah, because
don't you ever talk
Can
to them?
Can you stop doing that too? That is so
is
off-putting.
That you?
That's
so
God.
Off-putting.
I check out their shoes and go, is this an important person?
Okay, can I just ask you a question? Because I have never been in a male toilet. So are you proud of the noises that you emit from your body? When you're in the loo?
I wouldn't say it's pride.
You laugh, though. Like, if you hear something funny, you'll laugh. You know, you hear something funny,
you're not
funny,
embarrassed.
Go,
or are you embarrassed? You're not embarrassed? Oh,
no,
my God.
Not at all.
Women do not know. Like, you try very hard not to go to the toilet in a workplace or a public toilet. And you certainly, if you ever had to do a number two at work, and God forbid, you make sure no one else is going to be coming in or is in there. I mean, you can't stop people coming in and out, but you pray to God that no one else is going to walk in or out.
You know, that's interesting.
Particularly after you've just finished. Because if the smell's bad, then you're washing your hands at the base and they'll know it's you. So you're identified straight away.
This is the mindset of women when they enter in the toilet. That's amazing. You know what is interesting? Eddie, you ever been into the business class lounge at the airport? Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter which one, all right? You're sitting there before a flight. Have you noticed how soundproof their toilets are?
Amazing. Amazing. Sometimes I think there could be six blokes in the cubicle next to me and I wouldn't know about it.
Sometimes well, that's quite possibly the point.
We got what I think is enormous news. It's been all over my Facebook because that's the world I live in. But Queensland manufacturing icon Alvey Reels shutting its doors after 97 years. Started in 1920 down at St. Lucia. The building's still there, I think, where Alvey started. I can remember the story I've been told is Alvey Reels started with old man Alvey, the real old man Alvey, in 1920, started making them out of silky oak. Then they didn't have any silky oak. They make them out of camphor laurel. These are all types of timber. Then they made them out of cedar, and these days they're all made out of plastics. And then the most amazing thing, I own, I reckon, 15 Alvey reels.
Marto, why are you? It's been real. Like, that was the first thing you said this morning when you came in, and you've, like, you said it with such a heavy heart. Like,
but you know, the good thing is, I know it's not going
to
be, they're known for never breaking down, and maybe that's one of the problems. Like, they're made for saltwater fishing, which is really anything goes near the saltwater, whether it's a vehicle or any gear you have, a marquee, you know, picnic chairs, whatever you have, saltwater stuffs it. The Alvey reel is built to withstand saltwater.
Well, you're not alone, mate. There's other people who want to have a chat about it. Brett's from Caboolture. Brett, what do you want to say about Alvey reels, mate?
Oh, it's devastating. I mean, I'm using one that's 50 years old and I still use it. It still spins like it's brand new.
That's the amazing thing. If you wash them out, you know, with a bit of clean water, sometimes soapy water, the next time you go to use them, despite having salt water in them, bang, they straight away, they work again.
They still work. I mean, my grandfather used one that's about 70 years old, made out of rosewood.
Out of rosewood.
That's incredible.
So you're still using one made out of timber too, are you?
I still use a silky oak one.
They're beautiful.
Yeah, it's my other grandfather was actually one of their wood turners for them.
Oh, good Lord. Isn't it a sad day? You know why? Because all those egg beaters from Asia that are getting imported, and that's why...
Do you reckon that's what it is, that they've just been made... they're not obsolete if they're still surviving. It's just that there are cheaper things out
there. Cheaper things. And labour's more expensive here. There's about 20 people going to go out of business. I think they're at Carroll Park these days. But Alvey reels. Do you reckon they're world famous? Who we got? John from Cooperoo. You use Alveys?
I don't use anything else, Marlo.
Me too, mate.
I've got about 10 of them from the 700 C5 down to a 400 A5. I've even got a centre pin for me niggers. Mate, you cannot beat them. As far as I'm concerned, it's the saddest day for any Queensland Australian fisherman that knows how to use a beach rod.
Yep.
The old saying, Alvey reels fill the creel.
Yep.
I feel really sorry. I reckon Charles would be turning in his grave. Same for Jack, getting a bit upset here. And Bruce, you know, like, he's put in so much hard work to try and keep that place going.
So, John, are they're the family that have kept Alvey reels going? Is that who you're talking about?
That's correct, yes.
Hey, John, can I check? I didn't know when I was telling Ed and Robin about this while the song was on. Are they world famous or are we the only people using them here in Queensland?
Mate, no, they've made it over to America. A lot of people have caught fish with them over there. You know, they're just so reliable, as you said. I've never had anything go wrong with them. You put a bit of Vaseline on the spool, the axle, and she just keeps spinning, mate. Nothing like a big Jewy hitting you in the get those knobs spinning and whack your thumb on a car for the moat.
Oh, that's just a wonderful sentence.
John, that's just great.
That'll get replayed at some stage, John, out of context.
John, do you think it's because of the imported stuff overseas? Like, do you know why it's closing down?
I know for a fact. I spoke to Bruce. He was saying that the kids of today, you know, they want shiny things that have got all the bloody little gadgets on it. You know, there's all the stuff that can break down and what have you. And, yeah, it's sad that that's just the way of the world now. The kids want these new Fandango-looking things,
John,
you know?
John, put them on the front of your car with pride when you go fishing, because you know the Alvies will keep on going and outlive this company by a long, long time. We'll have them forever.
We'll have them, mate, all right.
Yeah. Good on you, John. Now, this is what will happen now. They'll become collector's items and they'll become very valuable. This happens a lot, Marta, when there's things like cars.
But then the family's lost it. You know, for them to close their doors, no, it must be
sad.
Pretty bad.
It's very sad. It's very sad, but there's a lot of love out there for the Albie Wheels.
Yeah, thanks, sure is.
So the Wallaby squad's been named, Marta, and Quade Cooper is not in this squad.
Mm. And it's very telling too, mate.
How old is Quade at the moment?
Quade's 29 now, mate. Okay. He's been doing this for 10 or 11 years. 2007-08, he came into the red squad.
Yes.
So 11 years he's been doing this. So 28 or 29.
Yep.
What do you know about older athletes? You don't get much better. I'll tell you what. So Checker gave him a go. Checker always had him as the backup 5'8 for Australia, of course, when he was the golden boy 6 years ago. He was the number one 5'8. He's had shoulder injuries, he's had a bit of leg problems, knee problems, etc. He's lost his footwork, and that's what used to get him out of trouble.
Okay.
What do you mean he's lost his footwork?
He's lost his foot speed.
I
often talk about it with athletes when they get over. James Horwell, former Australian second rower, he lost his foot speed. Stephen Moore's losing his foot speed now. It means when they get in tight, they can't drive as fast or as violently. They can't get themselves out of trouble.
Okay.
So what Quade does now, I can't you know, do it without diagrams. Yeah, he doesn't go at the defence. It's what they call going at the defence, Robin. His first step is sideways. Now, what going sideways does is buy you time. Now, I'm not saying it's cowardly, but it gives you a bit more time to operate. Okay. But what it does, it sends the whole back line and everyone else sideways. It also means the defence has an easier job of shutting you down. The footballer who's got confidence goes at the defence, tantalises them, and then gets rid of the ball. And that's how defenders get sucked in. That's supposed to be Quade's job. He ain't doing it anymore. Check has said to him, mate, I haven't seen a smile on your face. Hopefully you get your love of the game back. But the simple thing is, I'll tell you right now, there's no more football. It's all over for Quade Cooper. The Reds are finished with the season. He doesn't play for a club. He hasn't got another opportunity to impress. I can't see how he'll get back into the Wallabies ever.
Maybe that's – but everyone has their time. You know, and he's had a pretty good career, you'd have
to say. He's played 70 tests. He's played nearly 100 games for the Reds.
That's why when people call it a shock omission, I think of it more as like, well, isn't it just, you know, this was New Zealand. This happens all the time in New Zealand. You know,
turnover.
Yeah, it's just turnover. You say, thank you very much. You've done an excellent job for us. Now we've got somebody else.
So will he go to TV commitments? Because I've got to be honest with you, Marta, apart from you, Quade Cooper is probably the only other kind of rugby person that I can...
Yeah, what do you know about him?
How do you know anything about Quade Cooper?
Well, I know... Okay, so I first knew about Quade Cooper because he started to date former Olympian Stephanie Rice, and that got over very, very quickly.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then he went... he was with a Lorna Jane executive or someone within Lorna Jane.
Okay.
And they bought a house... See, I know nothing about his career. I just know about his love life. They bought a house in Bulimba and they were renovating it. And then...
Oh, he's renovating that house again now.
Well, he dumped her, according to the social media stuff, and
conjecture.
She moved out with girlfriends and he started to go out with the Miss Universe, Laura Dundevik.
That's beautiful. You know her? Story.
Yeah, oh yeah, God, yeah. He shipped her overseas when he went over to Toulon. You know, they were together over there. They were together. She was in Sydney. They were having a bit of trouble geographically getting it all together, but they've been together for a few years now. There you go. I'm talking about him not being able to poke his head through the line and you're going into his romance.
Well, I just am saying that he's got, and I've just gone onto his Instagram, he's got 365,000 followers. Like, he'll just get himself into being, you know, like, is there commentary stuff?
What have you just texted to me here? Semi-nude photos of Quaid in his budgie smugglers.
That's it. That's pretty much all his Instagram is. It's just him getting more and more naked. And interestingly, very few pictures of any kind of women. Just him naked or nearly naked.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
I don't know what a man with that many tats. Like, what is he qualified to do? Like, if rugby finishes up, I guess you just go overseas. Because it looks like the point we started with, looks like his Wallaby career is over. Mm. He might still hang around the Reds. But it's time, we're not winning. So it's time to say, who's the playmaker? Who's in charge of us being a dominant force? Quaid Cooper.
Fair enough.
You say, thank you, Quaid. You've done excellent work for us in these tests, and now it's time to move on.
We've been chatting a lot in the studio, and it's been all over the news, about what you can do in your home to defend yourself. Because, Marto, you brought us the story. Now, you mentioned it first, and then it sort of blew up the day after, of the two blokes, the housemates, that were playing a little bit for Xbox in their house, and then, lo and behold, a couple of tough guys have walked in and tried to threaten them, but one of the blokes managed to get rid of them by using what two implements?
A trident, which is a three-prong spear-like thing. What would you say? Like a pitchfork. His chainsaw and chased them around with that. I know, if you make contact, it's probably not a great thing with the chainsaw or the trident, but it did the job.
Well, the question is, Robin, asking each other, what are you allowed to do in your own home? If people come into your house and you're allowed to defend yourself, what are you actually allowed to do? What can you attack people with? And we've got Chris on the line, who is a solicitor. G'day, Chris.
Morning, guys.
What am I allowed to do? Someone walks into my house, they're threatening me and my lovely pregnant wife. What am I allowed to hit them with?
Well, actually, Marto hit it right on the head. Hit the nail on the head there. It's really just a question of what's reasonable, and I suppose it has had the desired effect. So it's a question about whether what you're doing is reasonable to repel the person from your house and to protect yourself.
All right. Let's say I'm renovating my house and he comes in, as those guys did, with tire irons, and I've got my nail gun. Can I start nailing him?
Well, you may not need to. The threat of having that nail gun might simply be enough. It's a question about whether they kept coming at you, and also whether they were inside your house or outside your house.
Uh-huh.
You might be able to close your door, for example, and call the police. You may not. They might already be in your house.
That is very grey. Because you could say, like, I could pull a gun out from under my bed, and if someone is in my bedroom and they keep coming at me and I could shoot them and kill them, but you're saying that is potential reasonable force because they were in that space. Like, that is very much open to, you know, who was there and who says what.
That's right. It's a complete defence to murder. So if, Robin, you were in your house and someone came into your bedroom as you described, you pulled the gun out and you shot them, that could potentially be a defence to murder.
So, Chris, you're a solicitor. What examples have you come across?
Yeah, so, well, there's actually a famous case from the Court of Appeal out at Longreach where a fellow had a visitor over. His two sons got into a fight with this fellow at the front of their premises, and the father, to break the fight up, pulled out a rifle and fired it into the air. That was enough to break up the fight, and the people left. So that's one example where that was lawful to fire the rifle.
Right, a warning shot. Okay, sure.
Fired a warning shot.
Yeah.
There's another matter where quite recently two people came around to a person's house armed with baseball bats and golf clubs, possibly.
Yeah.
This person came out the front of his house with a machete in his hand. They kept coming into his yard, so he went back in and grabbed a compound bow and came back out.
Ooh.
And the threat of a compound bow was enough. He didn't fire it. So
yeah, that's all right.
There's a difference there, but the threat of it was enough for those people to leave. So there's a lot of examples out there where this happens every week.
Every week? Well, that's quite scary. That means that there are people being threatened in their home every week.
Well, you do hear that from time to time on the news, and as this poor person did in Townsville.
All right, Chris, thank you so much. A solicitor from Anderson, Fredericks and Turner Lawyers talking about what's reasonable for...
So arm yourself, everyone. Get the chainsaw next to the telly and get into it.
But don't leave your front fence.
No. Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, guys.
It's time to acknowledge you, Marto, because you had a win yesterday. You were talking about the wind. You started at 5:30. You were getting people to call in saying it's going to be windy, it's going to be windy, and we were not on board. We were laughing at you. Some of the callers were laughing at you.
Oh, yeah, that's right. There's no wind where I am. Yeah, a couple of people backed me up. Remember that bloke said it's 37 Ks on our crane, it won't work. Actually, Channel 9, well, we all know it was bloody windy yesterday.
Sure.
You got to die down. And I'd filled my wife's head full of it. She went to work and she got a lot of accolades in the afternoon. Went, Kath, you were right. That wind picked up. So Kath's a believer. I am the oracle in her eyes. And that's the only thing that's important to me. It's not important that Channel 9 ran it one of their big stories.
Annette Anski and her husband's home here in Ansted sending a 40-metre tall tallawood into their house, and one of the big branches going straight into the main bedroom and landing on the bed where Annette would usually be taking an afternoon nap. Now,
thank God.
See, that's lucky.
Lucky escape for Annette, yeah. Well, why didn't she take the nap? I didn't see the reason, but thank goodness.
She was out securing the clothesline? Like, who knows?
That's a big tree.
I have to say, though, Marta, it was the funnest thing ever because I'm in Cairns.
You went up to Cairns with the boys?
Yeah. And I was saying to you, I was a little nervous about the flight, but it was literally like being on a roller coaster. So the plane took off and we could feel it really trying to, you know, get the momentum up. And then as soon as the wheels came up and we took off the runway, this gust of wind came up under the belly and it was like, woof. It's like you went into, like, I don't know, on a spaceship or something. It was the funnest thing.
The wind beneath your wings. Oh, it's lovely. What a day it was. What a day it was. Did you hear Channel 9 covered it in the city? And they're up a bloke in a singlet. I had a singlet on yesterday.
The westerlies blew in with a bang. In the CBD, cranes were at a standstill. All signs, a real winter was finally here. You could see it and hear it.
Probably didn't need that bit, did they? We all know what
did
wind sounds
that?
Like.
There we go. I was going to say, in case you are unaware of this idea of wind. Wind. Oh, I see what they mean. Oh, right. That's good.
Like. The wind.
You were right. Well done. Congratulations.
No, it's not what it's about.
No.
Yeah, and wind dying back today.
Is it? It's windy in Cairns. You've sent it up here.
Oh, is it?
Does it sound like this?
What happened?
It will do when I walk outside, guaranteed.
Oh, so it's gone all the way up. That's amazing. Wind. It's incredible.
Not that amazing. We've got to get out of here.
Oh, Marto.
Marto,
for the wind. Entertain you.
Thank you.
One more for good measure.
Yeah.